Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
When I was working at McLaren, starting with that clean sheet, it was important to establish a design language that had never been done before, because at that level, you don't want to copy other, mix and match different design solutions from different companies and turn it into that, what I call a minestrone soup. It really doesn't taste like anything. But if you can take the concept of nature, of why things are fast or developed to be fast in nature, what makes those designs fast, and you can apply that to a car design, then you must be doing something right. And I did that at McLaren by studying fast animals, fast birds, fast fish. They're all, I would call it shrink wrapped. In other words, there's no excessive material on these fast organisms. They're all basically honed to almost like an athletic looking body where there is very little BMI. You can almost say body mass index or mass to them. So they're almost like hungry looking in the sense that there's no superfluous surfaces. In other words, it's not rounded, it's sucked in. It's almost like what I call shrink wrapping. And that has given the McLarens that I've worked on for the last 10 years that distinctive, honed, very athletic, very light, very fast look to them, and very unique.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Frank, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I came across your work by way of your publicist who told me about the work that you did. And when I saw what you had done and the cars you had designed, I realized, oh, wow, those are the cars that every probably boy who ever thought about becoming rich has fantasized about since he was a little kid. So with that in mind, I want to start by asking you, what is your earliest memory of doing something creative that shaped and influenced who you've become and what you've done with your life?
Wow, that's a... I thought I was asked, I've been asked everything in my life, but that's the first time I've heard that one. The first thing I've ever done creative in my life, I think everything I've ever done is pretty much leaning towards having been creative from the very start. I can remember, I mean, if we want to look at the drawing side, that's all I ever did when I was a kid. I rarely went out. I spent every moment I could drawing. I grew up, I think, almost with, you know, some people grow up with bikes or getting out and playing in the sandbox. I don't have any memories of that. I have memories of sitting at home, drawing on a piece of paper or copying something that I've seen in a magazine or something or a comic book and drawing. So that's, I can't place that date, but I know that it basically is one of the first memories I ever have is just sitting there with a pencil or a piece of paper and drawing. I mean, obviously I was drawing something, but it probably was something like, I don't know, I grew up in Morocco, so it was probably a horse or a donkey or something, but the creative side has always been the artistic side. In other words, drawing or doing something like that.
Do you remember what sparked that interest, if anything, like where that even started?
Well, you know, everybody says it, or people typically have influences from their parents on whatever they end up doing or start taking a passion towards when they're growing up. My father wasn't much of an artist. My mother was pretty much more into the creative arts. She was, I remember, you know, the first memory I think I have of home, the smell that triggers home is oil paint. So I remember my mother was always into oil painting and, spending a lot of time in the kitchen painting. So I remember that the creative spark from that artsy side might have come from her. But on the other hand, I'm not really an artist. I'm more of a designer, which might sound a bit like an oxymoron in a certain way, because a designer is an artist, obviously, but he's more of a thinker in the sense of being able to come up with something that doesn't exist and is able to make it exist, if that makes any sense. That has a purpose to it. So there's a lot of science involved in a person who's a designer too. And that potentially came from my father. He was really on the technical side and the mechanical side, the industrial side of things. He wasn't much of an artist, and my mother wasn't much of a designer either. She would paint, but I think if you distill those two elements together, you'll probably come up with some similar traits and other designers that have that kind of influence when they're growing up.
Do you have siblings? And if so, did they end up on similar career paths?
Nah, yeah, I have a brother, older brother, 2 years older, but we're chalk and cheese. He's not hands-on like me. He's much more of just completely on the other side of the spectrum from me. I'm completely into doing things with my hands and constructing things and getting my hands dirty pretty much. Whereas he was pretty much of a, he read a lot, you know, he was into his research and things like that, a bit more into the book side of things. But I always just loved getting my hands dirty in the sense of creating things, you know, and using my hands to make things. And not to say I don't like reading, because I'm an absolute, you know, as crazy as it gets when it comes to getting a magazine or a newspaper or some research information in front of me. I do that with a passion, but I love using my hands to create stuff.
I can relate. One thing I wonder, having grown up in Morocco, here in America, particularly, you know, in the last few years, one of the really unfortunate things that has started to happen to our education system is that arts education is being cut from budgets because of the, you know, questionable value of it, which I think is completely insane. And I wonder, in a system like Morocco, what is the education system like, and how does a person like you fit in or stand out? I mean, does that kind of a system spit you out and, you know, chew you up? Or do you actually thrive in a system like that? How does it differ from, you know, what we experience here?
I think for me, it was a positive way of becoming what I am, because if you look at those kind of what we look back and we say they're exotic upbringings, you know, people think of that Morocco in the 60s as being about as exotic as it can get. But at the same time, and the education system obviously is important, but I don't think the education system really comes into play until your later years, when you start grasping the concept of education. In other words, we're educated as kids, you know, going up when we start going to school, but that's basically just fun and learning basic things. That doesn't come across to you as something that you need when you're going to be older to apply it to. It's a different way. When you start getting into your teens and years where you're going to start thinking about what am I going to do for the rest of my life, then you start thinking of education as something that's going to benefit you, I guess, long term. I just happen to be wired, if that makes any sense, to do what I do. I don't think I could have really been, not that I couldn't have been successful at something else, but I think what I'm optimally wired to do is to be what I am today. And I think a lot of that stems from curiosity. I've been incredibly curious about things throughout my whole life, since I was a kid. That's why I like reading. That's the similarity that I think that I mentioned I have with my brother. But I just devour books. I devour information. And nowadays it's a lot easier, obviously, with the internet and things like that. But basically, I think if you're designers aren't really made, if that makes any sense, or you don't become a designer. I think you can try, but the ones who are, say, successful or you know, hit home runs all the time, or the guys who are basically that way since they were a little kid, it's kind of hard to learn to be curious. I don't think you can actually do that, or to have that passion for drawing or thinking of things that don't exist. It kind of puts you into another dimension as a kid. And a lot of us don't have many friends when we're growing up, simply because we seem, you know, not that you're an oddball, but basically you get your enjoyment, your kicks out of doing something that most kids don't even consider. You know, people think it's work, but for me, it's sit down and draw and come up with ideas, conceptualize ideas for solutions to things is what revs me up, I guess, what gets me all excited and enthusiastic. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when I look at creative work, right, many people see writing in the same way. And I say, look, I don't see this as an obligation or an item on my to-do list. I see it as a privilege and something that I just look forward to in the morning. In fact, I would go insane if I didn't do it.
Yeah, absolutely true. If I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be one of the, you know, extremely frustrated. For me, it's almost therapeutic. I guess you can relate to that, because you know, a lot of people get into music because it's therapeutic, or they get into poetry writing, whatever. The creative side of life is for the guys who do it, is kind of it's not work. I mean, it's the only way you really you don't do a 9-to-5 job when you're in the creative profession. You basically live the lifestyle and enjoy it. I mean, there's frustrations along the whole way, because sometimes you get it right and sometimes you don't, but ultimately, when you do get it right, it pays back all that effort. Because it's tiring. I mean, to be, I don't want to just say designer, anybody who's in a creative profession, you don't really turn off. You're always on. You're on the receiving end all the time, picking up influences or inspirations from everywhere. So you don't really shut off. There's no like Saturdays, Sundays. I'm taking time off. It doesn't work that way in the creative profession. So, but I enjoy it. I mean, for me, it's the only way forward. It's I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. Maybe sports or something. But I think my outlet, my satisfaction and quality of life comes from being creative, I guess.
So you mentioned earlier that designers aren't really made and they're born. And it kind of brought to this question of, you know, and maybe there's no real answer to this, because I think that people have told me when I've asked a similar question, like, if I had the answer to that, I'd be a billionaire. But like, why does somebody like a Johnny Ive become a Johnny Ive? Or, you know, why do you know, people who design at that level become capable at that level? Like, what is that enables that?
For one thing, luck doesn't exist. I have never, ever believed in luck. What I do believe in is being in the right place at the right time and taking advantage of that, which is basically the definition of being able to be lucky, I guess you could say, because luck is what you make. You know, you see a situation or an opportunity, and you don't just sit back and hope it, you know, something happens. You have to make it happen. So I've been brought up with this philosophy that nothing's going to be handed to you. If you want something, you have to go out and get it. And if you want to make a success out of it, you have to put in a lot more effort than the next guy. And that there's always somebody out there that's going to do a better job than you. So don't ever be, you know, sitting back on your laurels thinking you're number one, because you're not. There's always somebody else out there. But with the case, like you mentioned about Jonathan Ives, basically I would say he's obviously got the talent to do what he's done. You know, you don't get to that level there without having some kind of merit or value of being able to do that kind of job well. So, but then when the opportunity is there, he's been able to grasp it. He's been able to not just turn out a beautiful product, but look at what he's done, or what Apple has done with him involved, obviously, is look for a product that most people didn't even imagine or know or think they needed, but or wanted. But what he's done is he's come up with a solution for something that nobody's asked for, if that makes any sense. So a lot of people, if you ask them, what do you want? Or what do you need? They have no idea. They're not really designers. They just take what's out there and use it. But if you can come up, like they have done, with a product that basically turns your life around, gives you, you know, some kind of advantage that you've never had before, and it does it successfully commercial way as they have done it, then they've hit it on the head. So Jonathan Ives is in the right place at the right time, saw the opportunities and the technology available, and he's put all those factors together and come up with a hit, pretty much. And they've continued on it because they understand the market, and they've created a value to the product, and established a whole, you know, Apple now is one of the strongest brands out there. If you're a customer of Apple, you buy anything they come out with, and you don't question it twice. You know, again, the competition is chasing them all the time, and it's not to say that they're always number one, but they have to really. They've set the bar pretty high with their products and with that mentality. So I think what it is, in a nutshell, is being able to understand, first of all, hoping you have that talent. Not hoping, but if you have it, you know it, I guess, you know, because that's what you live for. You don't think about trying to design, you just, or write music or anything like that. You do it, and the good guys do it well and pull it out of thin air and can make a success out of it. But if you can't do anything further than do that, then you're a bit limited. So if you're put into a situation where you can actually carry that idea onwards and reach a market with it, then that's what makes the whole thing makes it success out of the people who are. I mean, when I grew up in Morocco, the farthest thing from my mind was going to the United States and studying car design. I mean, that was like, it didn't even make any sense. And I was drawing cars like crazy as a kid. You know, I grew up, you know, getting interested in cars around 10, which is around the age that most kids start thinking, you know, cars are pretty cool. One day I'll be able to drive one. But I lived in Casablanca and Istanbul in those years there, and cars weren't really, you know, a thing in the culture of those countries. But for me, I was obsessed with them, and the loving to draw and loving to be able to come up with an idea for a car that didn't exist was fascinating. I had no idea that car design was a profession. I just thought, you know, cars, somebody pulled a switch or a lever and out came a car. I didn't know that you could actually sit there and design it and have it built and that it would come out and be sold. I had no awareness of that. But So basically it's just setting yourself up mentally and playing your cards right and putting yourself into the situation where it can happen.
Well, I think that makes a perfect segue to talking about your actual work. You know, you talked about setting yourself up mentally. I mean, you sign up for a life, I think, in any creative profession where nothing is guaranteed and anything is possible. So how, as somebody who signed up for that life, do you go from that to being the person who's the head of design for, you know, Ferrari, McLaren, the cars that I think every young boy has fantasized about when we jokingly say one day when we have fuck you money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not easy, believe me. Especially in the arts, because everybody's trying to stick a knife in your back and smile at you at the same time, because everybody wants that kind of career, you know, or get to a level where they can say, you know, they've accomplished quite a bit. And it's a rat race, just like anything else. You know, everybody is fighting everybody, and it's a dog-eat-dog world. But the guys who have success and manage to it's kind of hard, because you have to be a team player when you're working on those kind of things. You're not working for yourself. You're working for a company, and the company expects you to design a product that makes them profit through your creativity and your hard work. So you don't just, you know, some people are one hit wonders. They'll do a product or a piece of work, and then it comes out and it's successful, but that's the end of it. And you never hear from these people again. The ones that, you know, are sought after, the kind of designers that are sought after, are the guys who can repeatedly do something consistently at a level that is profitable for the company. And even more so if you're not stereotyped.
Hey, it's Srini. I hope you're liking this episode of The Unmistakable Creative. Did you know that every Sunday, our community manager, Melina, sends out 10 key takeaways from episodes like this one? All you have to do to receive it is sign up for our newsletter. Just visit unmistakablecreative.com/newsletter and you'll get them delivered right to your inbox. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/newsletter. Well, so, you know, one thing I wonder, what in the world goes into the process of designing an automobile like a Ferrari or a McLaren? And the other question is, why is it so damn expensive? Like, you know, you look at these things and you're like, okay, that is in our heads. And I do want to actually talk about this from a very psychological perspective, that for many of us, we think that's the pinnacle of achievement. If I'm seen driving around in this thing, although the funniest thing I've ever heard about this, Naval Ravikant, who's a venture capitalist, you know, extremely wealthy guy in Silicon Valley, early investor in dozens of companies. He said, he's like, none of these cars are practical to drive on the streets. And you think about that and you're like, right, of course. But we'll get to that. What I wonder is, what does the design process look like for such a high-end car, you know, and why?
Yeah, I'm sure it's, especially because our design studio, well, any design studio is sort of like a layer, you know, a secret layer, bond layer, where things happen that, you know, like magic potions are put together and out comes this amazing product. And how does that actually work? Which and nobody's allowed inside the design studio, because, you know, it's the secrets of the company are being held for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. So people are pretty curious all the time. But it's how does it work? I'll tell you what the secret is, that the not the secret, but the interesting thing is that the cheap, easy cars, cheap meaning not expensive, not that they're bad cars, but that they're, you know, everybody can drive them, so whatever, they're bread and butter cars, are just as fun to design as the high-end exotics. There's no extra pleasure, I would say, or enthusiasm designing a super exotic hypercar as there is to designing an everyday car. I tell you, I see a lot more Minis than I do McLarens and Ferraris that I've designed around. Yeah. So it's like you get to see your kids a lot more often when they're more popular than if they're high end exotics, you know, that you only see once a blue moon. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is the responsibility is the same, because if you design a bad car, in other words, a bad looking car that doesn't sell very well, that's going to be a heck of a lot more expensive for the company than if you design a beautiful car. So, in terms of investment, because the company has to sell these things. And if it doesn't sell well, no matter what end of the market you're at, the losses are incredible. So the pressure's on one way or the other. Mini, for example, you design that can be a huge success and create so many jobs and new dealerships and satisfied customers that the impact can be even huger than designing the latest McLaren or the latest Ferrari, which people, you know, kids will put them up on their bedroom walls and dream about them and hope one day they might be able to see one or get inside one or even drive one. But at the same time, you can affect a lot more lives with the cars that people are able to afford. So you're as enthusiastic as a designer to design any of those cars along that spectrum. It doesn't, you know, people think, oh, you must be in heaven designing McLarens. I was actually more in heaven designing McLarens than I was at Ferrari, because the fact with when you're designing a Ferrari, it's been around for 70 years, more around, and you have to design a car that looks like a Ferrari. Whereas when I went to McLaren, the brief was open. They didn't really have a history of road cars. They were a racing car company, and to design a road car for a company like McLaren, okay, the cachet is pretty significant. Impressive, but I had to create a look for a McLaren. There was no family feeling, no design language per se to base off to use as a kicking or a starting block for the new McLaren design language. So that was fun, being able to create a McLaren the way you envisioned the McLaren to be. You know, you're not restricted by something that's been done before, and it has to have that family feeling look. When you go about designing it, any product, I think. You don't just jump, start right away with churning out ideas of what this car is going to look like. It might sound like that's the process. And most of us, when we start design just with a blank sheet of paper and a big pen in our hands. We don't use computers like a lot of people think we do. It's basically just throwing ideas on paper with a pen. But the secret, I think, is first to research. A lot of research. You have to go in and look at what the market needs. You know, the marketing team will come in and tell you, this is what we expect you to do. But even the marketing team can get it wrong. And you don't really necessarily design what they're asking you to design. You design, or I design, what I think they need or what the market needs. And that is a different way of looking at the design issue, the design challenge, is to design what you think they need, not what they're asking for. So when you design at the high end, it's just the same as when you design it at the other end of the market. You're coming in with research on what the competition is out there, or what it's going to be like in 4 or 5 years. You kind of have to be you have to see, there's nothing hard because we don't know what the competition is doing in 5 years time. But if you can envision what trends are, if you go back and see what the trends are in design, you can kind of calculate what's coming next. I mean, if I told you that cars now are starting to come out that have laser headlamps, you would probably think I'm crazy. But we used to have just normal headlamps, and then we had, Xenon headlamps. Now we're actually starting to come out with laser headlamps. Well, there might be something that comes after laser headlamp. Which there is actually, but you have to start thinking on that sort of level there. So if you're designing something at the high end, like say a Ferrari, McLaren, Maserati, whatever, Lamborghini, you have to start thinking of solutions that don't exist today. And you have to try to work with an engineer who is about as crazy as the designer to make those things happen. Because what happens in the lower segments, in the high volume segments, is they don't want to take chances on new technology. They want to leave that to the guys at the high end. to take the chances. And, you know, it's a lot of investment to come up with new technology. But that technology at the high end will eventually trickle down. So you'll start getting high-end materials costing less and becoming, normal things in the industry. But it's a challenge because if you're going to design the next new Ferrari, you can't just design another car. It's got to add something to the market or bring an advantage to the market on something that doesn't exist at the moment. So you're working constantly on these ideas, these fantasy ideas almost, with a logical mind of a product that could work, right? You don't know if it's going to work or how to make it work. But when you get the crazy designer working with a crazy engineer, that's when the sparks fly. That's when the impossible becomes possible. I've never really even taken that approach where this isn't going to work. It's just how to find a way to make it work. That negative approach that we've never done it before. It's going to be too expensive. We don't know how to do it. All that is just negative vibes that designers hate anyway. So we always try to hook up with engineers who are as like-minded, I guess, as designers. They're looking for innovation and things that make the world move forward.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I guess to me, the there are two things I wonder. So is the cost of these cars just based on the economics of supply and demand, just because of the fact that, I mean, the market for McLarens is what, limited to these and billionaires? I'm like guessing how many of them they sell. Not many.
No, that's the thing. Nobody needs these cars at this end of the market. Ferrari, who needs that car? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, you can either buy a car, or you can buy a couple houses, you know, so, nice houses at that. So nobody really needs those cars. Those cars are, and anything you design has to, for me, to be successful, has to touch the emotional nerve of the customer, of the potential customer. In other words, it's rarely is it a practical decision nowadays. People expect quality. So if you buy something, you don't expect it to break down, or it won't sell over a long, you know, period of time. People are just won't have any trust in the product. So pretty much anything that you buy these days has got a sort of inherent level of quality to it. So then the design question becomes, does it touch you emotionally? Does it touch your emotional nerve and make you want to buy it? And of course, there's subjectivity to design in terms of taste. There's good design and there's bad taste. Good design and bad design. There's a scientific side to that. But taste, you can't account for. So when you're designing at the high end, you got to make sure that whatever you design has some element of emotionalism to it, such that the customer needs that product. In other words, he's maybe not expecting to buy it, but when he sees it, he's just got to have it. How many things, you know, in everyday life that we think, we're not even thinking that we need it, but you're walking down the street, you look into a window, you see a product or a shirt or any element or product, and you say, I wasn't expecting to buy that, but I definitely want it now and I need it because I just love it, look of it. So that's the kind of feeling you have to give to a product like a Ferrari or like a Maserati, where it becomes an emotional factor emotional purchase. Element.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that this stuff, you know, sort of trickles down to the lower market, because I have a you know, the new Mercedes A220, and it's literally Mercedes' lowest end car, and you sit inside of it and you're like, this looks breathtaking inside. But you know, I realized that what they were doing was they were creating a line that was accessible to people who are buying Toyotas. And that to me was kind of mind-boggling, which was super cool. But one other thing you mentioned earlier is about resting on your laurels. So as somebody who has to basically take these iconic cars, how each time do you go about, you know, doing a new one, avoid resting on your laurels? Like, how do you say, okay, how am I going to outdo what I just did? I mean, it's a McLaren or a Ferrari, for God's sakes. Like,
simply,
to outdo.
Simply because the nature of a designer is that he is never satisfied. You can't be satisfied as a designer. I've never, true, hand on heart, never fallen in love with anything I've ever designed. I almost have a hate relationship that I've had to stop designing it and hand it over to the engineers, because there's always one more idea that I've wanted to bring into the designer, one better modification that I've wanted to do. And at some point, because it's got to go into production, they force you to hang up your pencil and start something else, or just let them get on with it. But I am constantly unsatisfied with anything I've ever designed. I tell you, if I had to redesign or get back on any project that I've ever designed, the result would be different from what's on the road today. I just have this constant desire to not finish, to make something better than what it is. And again, how do you do it? I don't know. I just, it's almost like the ideas within my head are just constant. I always feel there's a better way to do something, a more efficient way. When I say better, I don't just mean different. I mean, there's a better, either it's has a performance value to it, or it adds an aesthetic value, of course, to it. But there's always a better way to do something. That's how my mind works. And again, it's very frustrating, because I'm never really satisfied with anything. Anything I look at in a restaurant, or when I go shopping, or anywhere, I'm always looking at something with a viewpoint that isn't as good as it could be. And of course, you get your inspiration from many different sources. I'm really, really obsessive about, it's a term called biomimicry, which is when you, designers get their inspiration from a lot of different sources. You know, you can be inspired by architecture, furniture, fashion, whatever. I always go back to the true, most intelligent source, I think I would call it is nature. And that is, for me, a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of inspiration that you cannot, it's unbeatable. In nature, it's rare to find something that's not beautiful. And if you think about it, it's not really designed. It's just evolved to be extremely functional and best of the best. In other words, it has to survive and has to continue. So the design and quotation marks of anything that nature is responsible for is pretty much an optimized design. So if you can use that as your inspiration for things that you design, you're on the right track for the best solution, for the most functional solution at the same time. And it can develop a unique design language that inspiration can help you develop a unique design language. This is what I did when I started with McLaren. We had no real history of design, road car design. We had race cars, but realistically, you can't design a race car to be a road car. So you have to come from a different angle. And when I was working at McLaren, starting with that clean sheet, it was important to establish a design language that had never been done before, because at that level, you don't want to copy other, mix and match different design solutions from different companies and turn it into that, what I call a minestrone soup. It really doesn't taste like anything. But if you can take the concept of nature, of why things are fast or developed to be fast in nature, what makes those designs fast, and you can apply that to a car design, then you must be doing something right. And I did that at McLaren by studying fast animals, fast birds, fast fish. They're all, I would call it shrink wrapped. In other words, there's no excessive material on these fast organisms. They're all basically honed to almost like an athletic looking body where there is very little BMI, you could almost say body mass index or mass to them. So they're almost like hungry looking in the sense that there's no superfluous surfaces. In other words, it's not rounded, it's sucked in. It's almost like what I call shrink wrapping. And that has given the McLarens that I've worked on for the last 10 years that distinctive honed, very athletic, very light, very fast look to them, and very unique. So there's no confusing, I hate it when people say, oh, cars look the same. That maybe is to the untrained eye for a lot of people. But when you start looking at what makes a BMW look like a BMW or a Porsche look like a Porsche, you have to hold on to certain design cues or certain design elements that give you that family feeling that runs genetically throughout the brand. And so to create that, it's not easy to create that because it's, like I said, most things do seem to have been done already. But if you go to nature and use that as an influence, which has rarely ever been done, then you can start to create something very, very unique. And I think that's been a big part of the success of McLaren in such a short time, is that we've been able to come up with a practical solution where the design looks good, but it looks good because it works well. In other words, that typical form follows function is one of the most ugliest things I've ever heard of in my life, or even stupidest things. Form doesn't follow function. Form is function. So I would say that both are, one equals the other. Whereas if the product functions well, it's naturally going to look well. And if it looks well, it's because it functions well. So you get one right, you get both of them right at the same time.
One of my favorite ways to spread the message of our mission here at The Unmistakable Creative is through speaking. In the last 2 years, I've delivered keynotes and workshops to professional associations, large companies like Citibank and Meredith Corp, and even small ones on how creativity can lead to better working environments, fuel innovation, and increase the bottom line. So if you think I'd be a fit for your upcoming event and want to learn more, visit speaking.unmistakablecreative.com and get in touch. Again, that's speaking.unmistakablecreative.com. So I love the fact that you brought up this idea of, looking at things that, you design never being satisfied with them. I mean, you have a documentary called Chasing Perfect, which I think really makes a perfect segue to how, I want to, finish up our conversation and talking about.
Sure, sure.
So, I told you about the fact that when all of us are children, particularly boys, I think we look at those cars and we think, that is the pinnacle of achievement. That is what life is about, is to get one of those cars. If I have one of those things, that's how I'll know I've arrived. Yeah. That's when I'll be happy. And of course, we have all the research in the world that shows that that's not true, that we can't solve our internal problems with external solutions like McLaren's sure. and Ferrari's. So as the guy who designs these things and somebody who perpetually looks at the things you design and isn't satisfied, how do you even think about that?
What we're doing is we're capturing a moment in time, and we're capturing a moment in society of what society wants at that moment. I mean, if I was to design a car the way I envision a car would look like for 2070, I guarantee you it'd be a flop because nobody is living in that day and age currently, and it probably wouldn't adhere to the technology that we have today in terms of what we need. And in the same way, if you look back, just backtrack, if a car today was offered back in 1910, it would scare the pants off of people, and they would probably refuse to buy it. You have to design for the age you're living and in the society that you're living, because you know different markets have different needs or desires, and you're designing a car for Africa. You wouldn't design something that's super luxurious, and there aren't the roads there to support that kind of network. You have to design what's practical for the times you're living in. If kids are thinking that this is the best of the best, it's because that's the best at the moment. What's funny is that we do get as designers the chance often to flex our muscles, I guess you could say, and do what we call concept cars that can show the public pretty much what's going to potentially be out there in 10 or 15 years or even 20 years ahead. The funny thing is, if you look backwards again, those concept cars from 20, 30 years ago have never materialized and actually look kind of ridiculous if you look back at them and think, you know, what were those guys on? What were they smoking? Because that is so far off of what we have today that it's ridiculous. And it's the same, I mean, not that they were, you know, was anything wrong with them when they were designing them, but that's the same thing that's probably going to happen to the cars that we design today or envision today for the future. They're going to look ridiculous 50 years from now because they'll say the same thing. What were those guys back in 2020 thinking, or what were they smoking? Because that is absolutely not what we're doing as vehicles today. We're moving kind of in that direction now, which might seem a little bit strange to the current generations. We're moving slightly away, not away, but to a solution, I would guess, that helps to change the age of mobility in the sense that we're going upwards instead of staying on the roads, purely on the roads. There's a whole trend now to what's called eVTOL aircraft, which is getting mobility up in the air that will lessen the amount of traffic on the ground, but improve the flow and the efficiency of getting from one place to the other. It's kind of like the air taxis, I guess you'd call them, of the future, where the infrastructure is not expensive because you don't have to build roads in the sky, so to say. But you build the landing ports and the vertiports, they call them, on the tops of hotels and different areas where you can land vertically or take off vertically. And you're flying with electricity, so you're not as polluting as a car or vehicle. You're getting there much quicker, comfortably, and we're trying to move towards autonomous flying, so you don't have pilot error. So that at the moment, if I tell people about that, they kind of think I'm off on one and not really. But the fact is, it's coming. We are flying. These planes do exist, and they work so efficient that it's unbelievable. It's kind of like finally the age of the Jetsons has arrived. And it's here. Now all we have to do is pass certification with the agencies that control, you know, air traffic and things like that. And they have to be absolutely safe, because that's the biggest obstacle is being very sure that these things are safe. And if you remove the pilot and become an autonomous craft, then that helps to be safe, believe it or not. You know, a lot of pilot error is responsible for accidents. So but this age is coming. It's coming very soon, and we're almost there. And so when you look up and you see these air taxis that probably don't even look like airplanes anymore, because I've always believed that the most efficient forms in in the air are not birds. They're actually fish. Fish go through a medium that's a lot denser than air. And so they have to naturally have a shape that's much more efficient. So aerodynamics and hydrodynamics are actually the same thing, just one's thicker than the other. So if you have a optimized shape that goes through water, imagine how much more efficient that is when it goes through air. So there's a whole direction now of aircraft design that is starting to move in that direction of really using much more efficient shapes than what we see in the air today. So it's an exciting world out there. And I think, you know, cars aren't going to become less desirable. There's just probably a new generation of kids coming up now that aren't so interested in purchasing their own vehicle. They want to, you know, use the money for experiences and using it to get from one place to another, but not owning objects, which we already see that in society. Yeah. But making that way of getting from one place to another safer, more enjoyable, and more comfortable is definitely one of the trends we see coming forward. So, you know, you just might see the day and age now in a few years' time when kids aren't putting cars on their bedroom walls. They're putting these eVTOL aircraft that kind of look like exotic fish that don't exist on their walls because they look so awesome.
Yeah. Well, I guess for me, the sort of deeper question is, you know, somebody like Jay Leno mm-hmm. comes to you. I know this from just having seen the mm-hmm. trailer for the documentary, he buys a car. You know, I think that all the psychological research shows, right, that we get this shiny new toy, the satisfaction from it lasts for whatever, you know, long time we think. Well, granted, like I can mm-hmm. tell you from having upgraded my car, I thought the satisfaction wouldn't last, but it's uh-huh. because it was the first really nice car that I had that I never stopped enjoying it. But, you know, the question I think really is, you know, when somebody like that does that satisfaction last? And, you know, as somebody who basically has spent your life, mm-hmm. you know, in your own words, chasing perfect, how do you live a life that's actually fulfilling and avoid bringing that notion of looking at everything and saying, how could I make this better to personal relationships? Because if you did that, I think to your wife, yeah, exactly. she'd probably go to hell.
No, it's obvious. It's obvious that perfection, I think I've said it many times, perfection doesn't exist. But I think the mentality of chasing perfect is an ideal way of everybody in life to be. You know, it's not right for a lot of people. There are a lot of people who just want to, you know, go off into the country and live as easy in a life as possible, as stress free as possible, and they're completely happy. That my brother bringing him in there, Raul, was just like that. He didn't have aspirations to change the world or to better the world or anything. It was more about just I'm going to exist and be happy with that. But we need people in the world who can make the right changes at times when it's absolutely needed. I mean, if we sort of stayed with the status quo, that is not going to help anybody. I mean, we'll probably pollute less, or you know, we'll find ways to make the world sustain us, or you know, not be damaged by progress. But at the same time, it's was it Steve Jobs, I think, that said, you know, the people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the people that do change the world. And you need those kind of people in society to move the world forward. They're fantasists, you know, they're deemed as the loony guys out there, but they're the guys who do provide solutions to the world that the world doesn't know they need them. But once they're shown that, you know, there are solutions out there that can make the world a better place for us, then they see it in a different light. But I can't help. I mean, I don't want to say it's right or wrong what I'm doing, but if I am not satisfied with something, it's only because I want it to be a better solution. And I'm enjoying right now sort of a renewal to my a renaissance to my design career, because I've finally realized, I don't know if you can say it, finally realized, I've known it for a long time, but the work I've been doing at the higher end of the market, of the automotive design market, like you said, doesn't reach a lot of people. In other words, it's not affecting too many lives in a positive way. And I've reached that point now where I think I've still got, you know, a good 15, 20 years of design, I hope, left in me. I'd rather take all that knowledge I've got, or I've accumulated over those three decades, and use it in such a way that I reach a bit of a larger audience in a beneficial way. So I've left McLaren about a year and a half ago, and I've taken on these different projects that are definitely going to affect the world in a much larger way than just designing high-end exotic cars, which, again, to say is not a bad thing, designing high-end exotic cars, because like we said, it's trickling down that technology. A lot of people say, what's the sense of a high-end exotic car that nobody can afford or very few people can afford? Well, that's the test bed for the technology that will enable cars in the future to be safer and more enjoyable and things like that. So you have to start at the high end to bring that trickle down that technology. Okay, but looking past that, if I can design something now, which I am, not to let the cat out of the bag, but I'm working on the safest infant car seat ever. So, one of our most prized possessions as people are future generation, our children. So what better thing than to provide a seat for your child when he's growing up or in his younger days, that will ensure him to be a heck of a lot safer than anything else on the market at the moment. So this new baby seat that I'm working on will be a revolutionary seat that that surpasses by a long shot anything else on the market today. Now, I feel really good about that. It might not sound as fun to design it as a high-end hypercar, but it's definitely as rewarding when it does reach the market.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. This has been really, really just eye-opening, thought-provoking. This is one random question out of morbid curiosity.
Sure.
Do you get to drive these cars or get to own them just because you designed them?
I mean, that's where I get angry. They don't give us these cars.
Oh, you can't ride my Mercedes if my roommate goes out for a joyride and crashes it.
Nah, I mean, I'll tell you that I don't, because a lot of these cars are limited anyways. You know, if they're going to build 399 of them at $1.5 million each, they don't want to just give you one. although you're kind of the daddy of it because it looks good and it sells well, but it's frustrating that they don't give them to you. What they do let you do is they let you drive them around. Uh-huh. They let you, if you go to another city in the world for an event or whatever, the dealer treats you a bit like royalty and promotes the fact that the designer is here and look, he's driving the car to this event. So you can feel a bit like a stud in that respect. But at the same time, you don't really get to own these cars unless you pay out a certain amount of cash for it, which I've never seen, telling you the truth, I've never seen the reason why these cars cost so much. Like I said, it's the cost the same to design a cheap, small car as it is an expensive car. You get the same kind of thrill and you put the same kind of energy into the design of it. But at the same time, also when you get to these cars like McLarens and Ferraris, the performance levels of these cars are so high that a normal guy is never going to know where the limit is to drive them at that limit. Right. So I do get the thrill of being able to go to a test track and have an incredible test driver nail it and show me what the car can actually do, you know, and for me, that's a huge thrill. I wouldn't want to drive like that every day of the week, but once in a while to get to feel the limits of a highly super hyper exotic car is kind of fun to get that opportunity.
Wow.
I've never owned a single car that I've ever designed. So but there's always, I guess they always say the next one, maybe, you know, the next one's going to be the best one and hopefully I'll own it. Yeah. I'm more into bikes than I am into cars, by the way.
Wow. So, well, hey, you know, if you're ever in Denver, let us know. We'll come hang out with
McLaren Denver dealer. Yeah, we'll take a trip to the McLaren or the Ferrari dealer and we'll see what we can do for the weekend.
Well, I have one final question for you. As you've probably heard me ask this, I know you've heard our interviews. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Mm-hmm. Say that again?
What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Unmistakable in what sense?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've asked this question to so many people and everybody has different answers to it. I'll give you the definition that I came up with for the purpose of writing my own book. You know, I define unmistakable as something that is so distinctive that nobody else could have created it but you.
Ah. Unique?
Yeah.
You mean, what makes somebody... Well, definitely, I mean, nobody can design what I... It's almost... again, going back to that wiring concept, we're all wired differently. You know, it just takes a couple different neurons to fire to make something unique on one person's radar, I guess. We all have our tastes, and we all have, you know, our ways of being, projecting our taste to the world or what we like and not like. But my upbringing definitely influences my identity, I guess you could say. I mean, like I said, I grew up in Morocco and these countries, so you can't expect somebody with that kind of upbringing to have the same design tastes or outlook on life as somebody who was brought up in a small town in the middle of, you know, Oklahoma or somewhere. It's got there is influences in your life that do guide you and form you as you grow up. I have a very unbiased, unrestricted view on cultures of the world and on people of the world. I find every place I've ever been fascinating, and typically I see there are negatives to every country and things, but I typically am optimistic in the way I view life. So I tend to concentrate on the good things or on the positive things that I can learn, and that kind of makes me generally to be viewed as a happy person, somebody who's smiling all the time, which is not a truth. It is not really the fact, because a lot of us creative peoples are very, very moody, I guess you could say. We can almost seem bipolar at times, but I think it's just a fact of life that if you're a creative person, you're an optimist, but at the same time, little things, we're not thick-skinned creatures, so to speak. Anything can affect us pretty hard, and we're sensitive to the extreme, especially if you're a Libra. So, but I think what makes us unique is basically, for one sure, one definite thing is your parentage, the way you're brought up in your family. And you can be completely different to your siblings, or you can be very similar in other respects too. I think that's a fact, obviously. But the way your parents bring you up, those values can really, really set you up for life. And the ones who are, you know, we all have, most of us love our parents, but some people have parents who really go to an extreme to make sure that you're brought up in a certain way. And my father and mother were both extremely, extremely involved with anything I've ever done in my life, and always tried to push me, I guess you could say, to make sure that I was putting in enough effort to get a good result back. And you know, not that they never praised me, they were just kind of disappointed when I never did the best they thought I could do. So there's this constant thing in my life about, I wouldn't call it imposter syndrome, but never feeling like you're good enough. You're never really satisfied with whatever you do, even if you do reach a high level in life of whatever you want to do. It's never the ultimate. There's always another thing that you can do in life that brings you to a higher level. So, you know, people say, "Gosh, Frank, you've accomplished a lot. Why don't you just shut off and relax and, you know, enjoy the fruits of your labor?" I can't. I wouldn't be happy. I have to just keep, you know, looking for another challenge that makes a big impact, not only on my life, but on society, I guess. And I remember you asked earlier about, you know, if you're never satisfied, how do you feel fulfilled? I don't know if it's really about feeling fulfilled, because if you feel fulfilled, you might as well hang up your boots and, you know, check out. It's that challenge that keeps me motivated to do better, or to do something better. And in terms of relationships, you know, I didn't get married till I was 50, you know, and I'd never been married before, and I kind of waited for a long time to get married. So I kind of had to make sure I got the right one in that sense. It took me a while, but I did find her. And so I am happy now. You know, I wouldn't change her in any way or shape or form. I'm happy. But that's just, you know, because I found her. If I hadn't found her, I probably wouldn't be married yet. Yeah. So, yeah. That's
amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us and sharing your really insane story with our listeners and your wisdom and insight. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Let's see. There is that film that's just come out called Chasing Perfect. We'll be at Sonoma in end of March at the film festival, where there'll be a screening of it, the International Film Festival Sonoma at the end of March. Then we're working on a book at the moment that will be coming out probably later this year. So it's a good in-depth detailed story about mindsets and getting through life without depending on luck, I guess. And the other thing obviously is the website. There's a www.frankstephenson.com, and that's about the best way to do it. Chasing Perfect is going on the Motor Trend channel, so it'll be downloadable through that site there. I'm boiling on the boil, as they say.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving, no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here, like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.